You're listening to Rounding at Rush, a Rush University Medical Center podcast that features the latest clinical advances, research, and innovations. I'm your host, Dan Dean. Today's guest is Dr. Christopher Chapman, a gastroenterologist at Rush University Medical Center. His expertise is in interventional and bariatric endoscopy with a focus on providing patients minimally invasive approaches in their care. Our conversation will center around the use of endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty, or ESG, a minimally invasive weight loss procedure that reduces the stomach's size and volume, and how that procedure compares with other weight loss treatments. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Chapman.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I want to level set our conversation and first talk about obesity in the United States, which is on the rise. Can you provide some context on why this is the case?
Yeah, I think it's a great starting point. The obesity issue is something that's affecting our entire country. And unfortunately, it looks like we're moving a little bit in the wrong direction. You know, if you look back at data from 1999 all the way up to now to 2000, the incidence of obesity has really increased by around 30% now up to about 42%. But there are projections now that that's going to increase to nearly 50% by 2030. So that really means that one out of two patients that you see in your clinic, one out of two patients are people that you see on the street, is going to be dealing with obesity and some of its comorbidities or complications. And to really put that into context, we're really talking about over 90 million Americans that are struggling with obesity. And even more so, the problem is there's about another 70 or 80 million that are at risk for developing obesity. So they have a BMI between 25 and 30. So these are people that who are on the cusp of potentially developing obesity are already struggling with their weight. And so I do think the root cause is probably multifactorial. For some people, it's, you know, genetics. Some people, it's medications they have to take for other conditions. I do think there's a big component related to dietary and lifestyle, though. I think more and more Americans are getting their caloric energy from ultra-processed foods that are really designed to be very palatable, hyper-palatable. So it makes people want to eat more, and they get these kind of satisfaction from getting these type of foods. And as a result, you have higher caloric intake from that. So I do think there's a little bit of a rigged game, even with the dietary aspect as well. But having that acknowledgement of all these things that are contributing is so key for a provider who's considering managing obesity.
And that puts a lot of undue strain on the healthcare system in general, with more patients becoming obese. Is that correct?
I would say that's right. I mean, the costs of having obesity are not only personal, but also societal, you know. And if you look at the data, it's nearly, you know, $170 billion that are spent annually on medical costs related to obesity. And that's probably expected to continue to rise between $43 to $66 billion by each year by 2030. And this was all data that was really coming into play even before we were having some of these new medications, like the GLP-1 receptor agonists or these kind of dual receptor agonists that have really been FDA approved now for weight management. We know that while they're highly effective, they still can have a high cost burden to them. And so that's the immediate cost of that. But also down the road, there may be some benefit. If you can save people from heart disease or kidney disease or liver disease, I think you kind of need to take a look at that avenue from a long-term perspective. But that's not always the case with these insurance companies who are making decisions on the more day-to-day impact in terms of getting coverage for these medications.
So one way to help obese patients is the use of bariatric endoscopic therapy. And one intervention in particular is endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty, or ESG. I first want to ask you, you know, what is it? And is it a fad within the medical weight loss series of options that are available?
So endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty, or ESG, is a novel endoscopic approach to treat obesity. And the unique factor is that it is done as an outpatient. It's under general anesthesia. It takes about 1 hour to do. There are no cuts, no incisions, no permanent anatomy alterations. And we use a special endoscopic suturing device to put in stitches or sutures on the inside of the stomach to basically reduce the stomach volume down to the size of a banana. And what that effectively does allows patients to get full faster and as a result, eat less food and lose weight. And so it's a really attractive option for patients who are maybe not ready or are not candidates for surgery, but are on the consideration of needing something more than just dietary and lifestyle maneuvers to help with their weight loss journey.
So at what point in the patient's care journey would you think about using ESG? Very early on, kind of, it doesn't really matter when. Like, when's a good time to use this treatment?
The data shows that this procedure can be highly effective in people with class 1, class 2, and even class 3 obesity. And what that really means is we treat a range of BMIs between 27 with comorbidities as on the lower end, all the way up to BMI 50, which it's FDA approved for, which, you know, this procedure is FDA approved in 2022. So we see a wide range. But in my clinical experience, most of the patients see significant benefit if they have a BMI between 30 and 40. That's kind of the real sweet spot that I think ESG can play a role in. And those patients that are higher BMIs, like BMI 45 plus, probably should be more considered for true bariatric surgery. So I think understanding what the patient is coming in with their expectations and also what their starting point is really key to making sure that they go down the right path for them. So even though it is FDA approved between a BMI 30 and 50, I really try to target my patient population to that kind of 30 to 40 range. There are so many fads in medicine, or just in life in general, and weight management's no different. I think for those are practitioners out there that have dealt with bariatric surgery in the past, you know, lap band was a very, very common and exciting procedure, and it came and it went, and it's not really performed as much anymore. And I think that's why some of the bariatric surgeons in the community have a little bit of healthy skepticism when they see a new procedure come along, because, you know, they've had their experiences with lap band and other bariatric surgeries. And I think ESG is a little bit different because it's really driven by patient demand. And the patient acceptance is a big factor in terms of deciding, I think, the growth of a procedure. And patients are really, what I found to be, is really willing to do an endoscopic approach because it is less invasive and there are less side effects, less complications. So the willingness to go forward with an endoscopic procedure is a little bit higher than some of the surgeries that have been out there. And I think that's why I think we're going to see this really be more than a fad. The data really bears it out too, because you do see that this weight loss that people achieve can be significant on the order of like 15 to 20% of their total body weight loss, and it can be durable for years. So if you can get a safe option that's effective and durable, then I think you really potentially have a winner.
So say if I were a referring provider and I have a patient who's with me and I don't know which is the best options to advise them of, and I know we'll get into this a little bit later in terms of kind of the range of bariatric interventions that one can do. When should one think about using ESG within that sort of continuum or time frame? I know you talked about the BMI ranges, yeah, which would be appropriate. How would you characterize someone who's looking to help their patient out? Like, when would be a good time to sort of implement it? Are there any other sort of guidelines or things that referring providers might want to know?
I think it's tough, right? If you're a primary care physician or a physician with another subspecialty, there's so much interaction with obesity and weight management to across multiple conditions. And sometimes it's hard to triage that conversation for weight management, even to bring it in to start that conversation. And sometimes you have to gauge the temperature in the room a little bit before you know if they're ready to have that conversation. But if you do find that a patient is ready and willing to have that conversation, I think that's where it's really my job to kind of help steer them in the right direction. I think the referring providers, they can understand if there's a comorbidity or if there is a issue that with their weight management that they're willing to have the start that conversation. If they're ready and willing to acknowledge that they might need some help, that'd be a great starting point. And then I would actually refer to either myself or one of my colleagues who are in the wellness center here at Rush that can kind of help navigate the pathways for them, because it's become so nuanced now with, you know, the new pharmacotherapy options as well as these endoscopic procedures and then bariatric surgery. Sometimes it's kind of hard to understand where to begin with. For me, if a provider is ready and willing to start that conversation, you've already made such a significant improvement in tackling this condition. At that point, I would then recommend, just due to time and convenience, sending it over to our clinic so that maybe we can help navigate all the different pathways.
For something like ESG or other endobariatric approaches, what are the overall positives to help this patient population when you use them?
Endobariatric options such as the ESG are really attractive to patients because it's non-invasive, or at least minimally invasive, meaning we go in through the mouth to do all these procedures, and we don't make any skin incisions or have to make any permanent anatomy alterations. So that avoids any scar tissue externally, but also internally. You think about people who have, you know, adhesions related to surgical maneuvers. You don't have to worry about any of that because it's all done endoscopically. And you also don't have to worry about other complications. Like, for example, sleeve gastrectomy, we're actually removing about 80% of the stomach surgically, which is by far and away the most popular bariatric surgery in the United States, is associated with increased risk of complication. You know, still in expert hands, and here at Rush, they're very good, are very low, but still higher than what an endoscopic approach would be. And some other things would be that you may be at higher risk for developing new onset heartburn or reflux disease. And I've just found in my practice that with ESG, you're not as high a risk for developing those complications or new onset reflux. So I think if you can get patients back to work faster, so more limited downtime, have good weight loss, lower risk of complications, patients just find that to be more attractive.
And then what about the drawbacks? Are there any to using ESG?
This is a very common question that I get is, what are some of the limitations of ESG? And I'll be the first to tell you that there are limitations. The frequent conversation that I have with patients in the clinic is, what's the difference between endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty or ESG and a surgical sleeve? Because they both have sleeve in the name. It could be confusing for providers and patients. I think the three main drawbacks that I've really seen in my practice with ESG is that the first being that the amount of weight loss. So if your goal is to lose 100 plus pounds, you're probably more likely to achieve that with a definitive surgery. The amount of weight loss typically for an endoscopic sleeve is around 60 to 80 pounds, I would say. But it kind of tops out at around 100 pounds at the max we've seen. Like, you'd be the top 1%ers if you were able to achieve that with an endoscopic approach. So it depends on what their goal is. So the amount of weight loss is higher with surgery. I think the rapidity of weight loss, so the speed that the weight loss occurs, tends to be a little bit faster with a true surgery than the endoscopic approach. Unfortunately, a lot of patients really want to lose weight and achieve their goal weight as soon as possible, and that happens to go faster with a surgical approach. I think the counterpoint is, sometimes if you lose weight a little bit too fast, and sometimes you lose lean muscle mass, you kind of get a, oh, is this person sick type of appearance, and, you know, or something wrong with them from a health standpoint. And so I do think with the ESG, you get a more natural weight loss where it tends to be very rapid in the beginning and then kind of tapers off to about 4 to 8 pounds per month, 1 to 2 pounds per week in terms of the maintenance phase. And so that is a good thing and a bad thing, depending on what the patient desires are. And then finally, the third thing would be that I think the durability. I think a surgical sleeve probably remains a little bit tighter, longer than an endoscopic sleeve, given that you're removing 80% of the stomach permanently versus us putting in sutures or stitches on the inside. Unfortunately, in the bariatric world, whether it's endoscopy or surgery, everything stretches. A gastric bypass will stretch, a sleeve gastrectomy will stretch, an endoscopic sleeve will stretch. In fact, that kind of gets to one of the things I do, is that I get a lot of consults for people with weight regain after bariatric surgery. And that's because sometimes the sleeve gastrectomy stretches or the gastric bypass stretches. And what I can try to do is to retighten that to hopefully get a little more restriction and enhance their weight loss.
So I'm curious about patients who get ESG. Do they have to have any corresponding dietary changes as a result of their stomach being smaller?
That's a very important point that I stress with my patients. I think anything with weight loss really has to build on the foundation of dietary and lifestyle changes, behavior modifications. The ESG helps augment that process. It helps make sure people are adherent to that process. If you have an ESG procedure, I typically recommend people go on a clear liquid diet for about 3 days and then a full liquid diet for at the minimum of 2 weeks. But it can be up to a full month that we do the full liquid diet. And that's for several reasons, to try to enhance that durability of that suture construct that we've made. So sometimes we do a little bit longer of that full liquid phase, but also it's a safety thing. You know, I always tell the story to my patients. There was a gentleman who wanted an ESG, and usually feel back to normal within about 5 to 7 days. So you understand that the first 3 days you may have some pain and nausea, but usually you're back to your normal self within 5 to 7 days. And this gentleman was no different. On day 6, he felt so good, he almost believed he didn't have a procedure because all the symptoms went away. He calls me from the car and says, I had a pullover. I vomited, and now I have abdominal pain. And I'm like, well, tell me what happened. And he's like, yeah, I'm taking my kids to band camp, and then we were rushing out the door, and I had a quesadilla and a roasted potatoes and cream of asparagus soup. And I ate it all under 10 minutes. And he ended up developing a leak because of the sutures, like, you know, are on the inside. And he got a nasty infection that was something we were able to treat endoscopically without the need for surgery. But it was something that I believe was completely preventable, right? So that's where really understanding, you know, the diet and some of the risks are involved. Yeah, this is still a procedure that can have complications, but dietary adherence will help keep you safer. Now, Quesadilla Man's really, really famous, you know, in our clinic. So every patient gets to learn about Quesadilla Man. And I've called my colleagues in New York and in Boston, and they're like, oh, you have a Quesadilla Man? We have a pizza guy, or we have a chicken woman, you know. And so these things are always like, it's well known that it can be a risk, but adherence to the dietary protocol is probably one of the most important things in terms of safety, I would say.
There are a number of medical weight loss therapies currently available, such as bariatric surgery, which we talked about, medication management, ESG, to help patients. Can you provide a high-level overview of how clinicians should know, like, which therapy is most appropriate for a patient? Like, just, there's so many to choose from. I know we talked about this a little bit before, but I'm wondering if you can go into a little bit more depth about that.
It's tough. In terms of 2024 care, I think it really comes down to a few things. Number one, patient acceptance. What are they willing to do? For some patients, that can be surgery. For some patients, it's not a procedure at all. I think we then have to ask ourselves as providers, what's the durability of the intervention you're going to do? What's the likelihood for adherence to the therapy? And then as providers, also think about the cost or the cost effectiveness of these interventions. So these are all the kind of the four things that I run through in my mind as we start thinking about what is the most appropriate therapy for these patients. Because a lot of it will be driven by all four of those factors or the combination of those four factors. So yeah, you may use BMI as a starting point and understanding what the expected weight loss is with these different interventions. But really, it comes down to those four things, which is really just, again, just acceptance, durability of the intervention, adherence and availability of the intervention, and cost effectiveness. And if you really kind of answer those four questions, I think it can start steering you in the right direction, because I've seen a lot in my practice where, like, patients are much more willing to try one of these new medications as opposed to doing a procedural or even surgical intervention. So that's really kind of starts pivoting that conversation more towards, you know, what are the available options for medications? Can we find these medications? Sometimes it's very hard with, like, supply limitations currently. Will their insurance cover these medications? And these are all the factors. And then once they start them, what are the likelihood they're going to stay on them because of side effects? A lot of these new GLP-1 medications are very, very effective, but they are associated with some GI side effects. So understanding what are the likelihoods they develop, you know, symptoms that would prevent it from continuing, and what are the contraindications to some of these pharmacotherapy agents are really important in terms of deciding which way to go.
And so where does ESG fall in the continuum of, for patients, risk tolerance and efficacy?
So it's right there straight in the middle. And I love that you brought that up, because any weight loss intervention we talk about really is kind of a balance of efficacy and invasiveness. Surgery is very, very effective, but comes as a cost of being more invasive. Pharmacotherapy would traditionally, before the GLP-1s, was very, very minimally invasive, but also wasn't as effective. And so endoscopy was kind of right in the middle, where it was a little bit more invasive, but also more effective. And so kind of we try to think about how this field has been evolving. And I think it mirrors, or at least can sort of mirror, cardiology and cardiac surgery. And before, you used to do a lot of invasive cardiac surgeries, but then interventional cardiology colleagues actually started doing more and more of these procedures minimally invasively. So similarly, along the same path for heart disease, you have medications, you have cardiac bypass surgery, but also you have these minimally invasive options like stents and stuff like that. And I think weight management kind of has that similar paradigm where you have more invasive surgeries, pharmacotherapy, medication options, and now these minimally invasive endoscopic options. I think the paradigm is also changing a little bit more with these new medications, because if you talk about a balance between invasiveness and effectiveness, the effectiveness of these drugs are only getting better and better, right? And so that's where I think it really starts to the question of, like, okay, medications versus ESG. And I think getting back to your question is that ESG has been associated with durable weight loss on the order of years. And we know what these medications are, that if you stop them, you're going to put the weight back on. that was borne out in some of the trials that led to FDA approval. Further example, for semaglutide, which is one of the most common GLP-1s that is very, very effective, when they randomized them to either going staying on the medication versus going on to placebo, when they went to placebo, it was associated with weight regain. So I think the balance is really trying to find that procedure that is also going to be effective but durable. And the ESG is part of some of the studies we've done has been showed that the weight loss can be maintained for years. Now, it's not 100%. Nothing is 100%. But if you look at the data that was published in some of the studies we worked on, including the MERIT trial, which was a big randomized controlled trial that led to the FDA approval, that actually showed the weight loss was durable out for 2 years and kind of in that vigorous setting of a clinical trial.
So there's one thing I want to come back to that you touched on before, which is for patients who have bariatric surgery, sometimes they have additional weight gain post-procedure. Can you talk about some of the treatment options that are available for those patients?
Weight regain after bariatric surgery is definitely a continued and emerging problem in the weight management field. Sleeve gastrectomy is by far and away, as I mentioned, the most frequent bariatric surgery performed. Typically around 60% of the surgeries in the United States are sleeve gastrectomy. We know that it was actually really started getting covered insurance in beginning in about 2011. And that's really when you started seeing that uptick in the number of sleeve gastrectomy cases. If you look at the data, most people reach their peak weight loss 1 year after having a sleeve gastrectomy. And then after that, they kind of start either maintaining or kind of plateau, and then unfortunately some regain. And the studies that looking at weight regain vary because how you depend true weight regain, but I think everyone's uniformly 15 to 20% of the regain of what you maximally lost. If you lose, regain that amount of weight, that's considered clinically significant. That can happen anywhere between 15 to like 30% of patients. And so the question is, what do we do as the next step for these patients that have had this invasive procedure? And sometimes classically, that's been conversion to another surgery. I think we're seeing a lot of interest in these new medications, but endoscopy has some options as well. We use the same suturing device that we do for the ESG to do revisions of gastric bypass or dilated sleeve gastrectomy. So what we do is if we do endoscopy, we look to see if the gastrojejunal anastomosis is very dilated. And there are some studies that show that as the anastomosis gets more and more dilated, that can lead to higher likelihood of weight regain. So what I do is I use endoscopic suturing to basically retighten that dilated anastomosis down to about, 6 to 8 millimeters in size. And we've seen these anastomoses be up to like 30, 40 millimeters. If I can take a 40 millimeter anastomosis down to 8 millimeters, what you're doing is you're basically making it tighter to help re-provide that restriction that they had lost over time. Because I think a lot of us that see these patients in clinic, you ask them, can you eat more than you could before? You're going to hear a lot of yeses. Like, I used to only be able to eat half a hamburger. Now I can eat the whole hamburger and the fries and the nuggets and the milkshake. So I think you'll see a change in patterns of the level of satiety that probably is partly reflected mechanically to the post-surgical anatomy that is stretched out over time.
One last question for you before we end our conversation, which is about some exciting avenues of research that are being explored in the field of bariatric endoscopic therapies. Is there anything that you want to draw particular attention to?
I think we're continually working on trying to enhance the efficacy and durability of our current procedures. So they're testing new techniques to try to get a little more juice out of the squeeze from an ESG procedure. But also, I think where the biggest move we're seeing is trying to move more towards procedures that are actually designed to treat some of the metabolic side effects of obesity. And one of the newest things we're seeing is actually endoscopic procedures that are actually being used to treat diabetes. There is a procedure called the RESET procedure made by a company called Endogenics. And basically, you use electrical fields pulse to treat the duodenum and reset people's insulin sensitivities. And we're actually going to be hopefully a site and trial to recruit patients for this clinical trial. And so I'm really excited to try to bring these procedures that are designed not only just to work on weight management, but some of the comorbidities associated with weight, such as diabetes, fatty liver disease, and high blood pressure. So that's kind of up and coming that I really hope that we'll be able to enroll patients here in Chicago with type 2 diabetes that are kind of refractory to some of the medications. And, we see a lot of patients that are on insulin, and we really want to try to get them off. And if we could do endoscopy to help treat that, I think that'd be really exciting.
Well, Dr. Chapman, thank you so much for a great conversation.